The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show. And indeed, it is a very big weekend here in Dallas as we get set for the 2010 version of the Red River Shootout. And our next guest, hey, although he is a very proud Nebraska Husker who was part of three national titles back in the 90s, Jason Peter always delivers strong opinions on the teams, the rivalries, right here in the Big 12 Conference. That's right. It is time for our Under the Helmet segment. And Jason, welcome aboard.
How you doing, Elissa?
Doing great. I got a little crick in my neck that won't seem to go away, but obviously we are all ready to, whether it be at the Cotton Bowl or in front of the TV, watching the great rivalry. I know that you have followed this throughout the years. The Huskers, your team has a bye. They have the weekend off. I'm going to assume that you're going to be cheering for those Sooners.
I'll tell you what, Elissa. Normally I would be all about Boomer Sooner, but you know, in a couple weeks I've got my golf tournament, and if Texas comes in here with two losses and unranked, it's taking away all the hype. This was supposed to be a great weekend. You had two undefeated teams hopefully coming in. Game day would probably have been here, and now Texas had to go and blow it all by getting manhandled by UCLA.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. You know, it's interesting that you bring up, I mean, because the quote of the day for Oklahoma from Travis Lewis, the linebacker for the Sooners, he said, you know, I didn't want Texas to lose against UCLA. He wanted Texas to be 4-0 because their full arsenal, they wanted to, you know, be prepared. He was disappointed.
Yeah, you have to play the game no matter what. So I think all players think the same way. You wish that every team you could play that week would be undefeated. It just adds more to your resume, and especially now when you talk about, I think college football as a whole and going to a BCS game and your body of work is taken into consideration, it doesn't help Oklahoma that Texas has one loss. Now, I don't think it's going to necessarily hurt them at this point because Texas still is a top 25 team. They're still, I think, very well respected around the country. But, yeah, I mean, as a player, you hope that that team that you're playing has as much credibility as possible for that upcoming game. But, yeah, I mean, this is a great game. I mean, this is one of the all-time greats. College football, I mean, this is the game that ultimately, in my eyes, broke up the Big 12. In a lot of ways, because I don't know if Nebraska would have left if Nebraska was still playing Oklahoma every year, but when they formed this conference back in 1996, they had two games to pick from as the premier game of the conference. You had either Oklahoma-Nebraska or you had Oklahoma-Texas, and they chose to go with Oklahoma-Texas, and I've said it before on your show that if Nebraska was still playing Oklahoma year in, year out, I do believe that Coach Osborne would have remained in the Big 12.
Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. He is joining us on our premier sponsor, the Western Company of Texas phone line. You can go to their website at wct.us.com. And I tell you, I kind of grimaced a bit after I did see that score, you know, Texas, UCLA, you know, because you think about just how much emotion and passion they're going to play with when they come down that tunnel.
Yeah, Texas is going to be fired up. They have a lot to prove here because there are a lot of doubters right now. And especially when you look at the way that they lost to UCLA, it's not really typical of a Will Muschamp type defense. I think going into the game, they were ranked number one in rushing defense. And UCLA, and when you think of West Coast teams, you think of, you know, throwing the ball all over the place. And Rick Neuheisel, he's not, let's just say, he's not a Bo Pelini. That's the best way of comparing. But UCLA they lined up and they just pounded the ball right at Texas, and they couldn't do anything. So I got to imagine that Texas is out to say, hey, That was one game where we didn't come with our A game. That's not us. That's not what we stand for. I mean, everybody saw Mac Brown make the apology right after the game, and the only thing that was missing were tears coming out of his eyes, and maybe they did towards the end of the interview, but I just didn't catch it. But, I got to imagine that he's kind of rallied the troops here, and they're going to give Oklahoma everything they got.
As I understand, they had a very passionate, an emotional team meeting after that loss, and it was just so shocking. You know, you think about Rick Neuhausel, even what he's done at UCLA, a very disappointing season last year, 7-6, and let's not forget what their second game into the season this year at Stanford at home. After that loss, what he addressed the crowd, and he apologized for how his team played. Who would have ever thought that they would go into Austin and pull off such a big and convincing win against Texas?
Yeah, and I mean, it's shocking, but you think back to John Makovic's last year, and I think that was the same year when UCLA went into Texas, into Austin, and just annihilated them. I mean, they put up 60-plus points, I think, on Makovic's defense, and the offense maybe scored a touchdown or something. I forget the exact score. But, yeah, I mean, shocking when you think about how bad UCLA got pounded by Stanford. Like you said, I mean, the head coach didn't even wait till the press conference. He went right up to the fan base and started to apologize while they were still in their seats. So, yeah, you never know how a team's going to react coming off of a loss or even a close win. I think Oklahoma, when you look at what they've been doing this year, I mean, they're so kind of Jekyll and Hyde. And the Cincinnati game, certainly it was not a dominating performance. And you just kind of wonder which team is going to show up. Is it the team that pounded Florida State, or is it the team that barely got by Air Force and Cincinnati? So I think this is week five. And by now I think most teams should start to kind of show their colors and show everybody what kind of team they actually are.
Well, Oklahoma, you know, you have to say that they have been inconsistent. We have seen that. But the one thing you have to point out, too, is they are winning close ball games. They did not do that last year, Jason.
Yeah, I know. And that's, I think... The one big difference between this year and last year was because they were in a lot of those games last year, but they couldn't find a way to win. It's the one way, one positive way of looking at it. I think when you think of Oklahoma, you think that when you line up against Air Force, you're going to beat them by 3 or 4 touchdowns. Or when you line up against a not good Cincinnati team, at least in my eyes. I mean, you know, they had a change at the top with Brian Kelly going to Notre Dame, and they've really struggled up to this point. In this season, you expect Oklahoma, a team that I know I thought going into the year that they were tops in the conference. They were the team to beat in the Big 12, and they still are, I think. You know, they haven't lost yet. And we'll see what happens. But I think when you walk that line long enough and you're just getting by with 3-point victories or 5 or 6 or 7-point victories, sooner or later, someone's going to jump right out and sink its teeth into you, and you're not going to be able to pull that one out. You can't keep waiting until the final 2-3 minutes of every game to pull them out.
And, of course, kickoff is set for 2:30. We are visiting right now with Jason Peter, our Under the Helmet segment. And let's focus and talk some more about Texas. I mean, Mac Brown, Greg Davis, the offensive coordinator, they are looking for immediate production, and they're going to be looking for playmakers. As I understand, the Longhorns, they've shuffled up a number of the starters or shuffled things up. And I guess, you know, what's amazing, and one of the stats that really jumped out at me is Texas right now ranks 9th among teams in scoring in the Big 12 Conference. And last year they were, what, the top team?
Yeah.
They got to get their offense going. That's the point I'm trying to say.
It's not a great year for the Big 12 either. When you look at the teams and you know, there's usually that comparison. Is it the SEC or is it the Big 12? I don't think you're going to hear anybody from the Big 12 this year trying to say that we're a stronger conference than the SEC, but yeah, I mean, look, Texas loses their all-time winningest quarterback in Colt McCoy. And, And I think when you look at the offensive line, they've got some new guys in there. And you know, to start with, I didn't think their offensive line last year was that great either. I think you had an athletic quarterback in Colt McCoy that could make plays when protection broke down. He was athletic. He you know, was a good thrower by the time he left Texas. You know, that image of kind of that skinny Colt McCoy being knocked to the ground and having to be helped off by trainers, it seemed like every other play early in his career, you know, that kind of fell by the wayside towards, you know, his senior year. He was a kid that could do it all. And, you know, there's a reason why he's the most winningest quarterback in a program that's as deep in tradition as Texas. But I think you're breaking in a new quarterback this year with Garrett Gilbert. I think the offensive line has probably gotten worse than last year. You don't have any true playmakers. You know, the Jordan Shipleys, the Quan Cosbys, you know, those guys are gone. And it's now you got a new crop of kids, and somebody needs to step up. And up to this point, nobody really has. You know, it's difficult for a defense to continue to have success when they're always out on the field. You've got to give them a little bit of time over there on the sidelines to catch their breath and get their legs back underneath them. But you saw it against UCLA. They were out there, I think, most of the second half.
We're talking OU Texas with Jason Peter, our Under the Helmet segment. Only have one more time in regards to this particular topic. Then we're going to talk about your Cornhuskers. What has, you had mentioned, Jason, you know, when we visited about the Sooners, just the inconsistencies. You said Jekyll Hyde. You're not sure what team will emerge and show up. Perhaps, you know, going into the fifth game of this season, what has impressed you the most about the Sooners?
Well, I love DeMarco Murray. I think he's top three running back in college football. I've liked him since he got there. He's just a big physical running back, and you know, he's kind of gotten over the injury bug, I hope. You know, it's something that's kind of bothered him for the last couple of years, and anytime you have a guy of that caliber, you know, and it goes back to what we were talking about when you have to play a team, you want them to be undefeated. You want them to be as good as possible. Well, when you play a team, you want them to have their best players. You want to be able to beat them and say, yeah, and we beat them, you know, with this guy and that guy in the lineup. Not, you know, when they were missing their starting quarterback or their starting running back, but, you know, DeMarco Murray is somebody that he's a joy to watch. And the Oklahoma defense, I do think that they're missing the big guy in the middle, Gerald McCoy. Sometimes, you know, the big guys don't get appreciated so much, and it all starts in the middle there. And he was a great one. And I think Nebraska sees the same thing here without Ndamukong Suh. You know, it's tough. When you talk about great defenses, you talk about having at least one really, really good player in the middle there.
Beautiful segue. Let's talk about the Nebraska Cornhuskers, of course, last weekend at home, South Dakota State. And I have to tell you, I was completely shocked when I saw the score. Did they just, you know, sometimes you play to the level of your competition, or perhaps was South Dakota State, were they really that good?
Well, Bo has already come out and he said he's never heard of playing down to his competition. I find that hard to believe, but I understand, I think, what he was trying to say. And it was embarrassing. I think that's the easiest way to put it, Alyssa. I mean, this was a team, you know, 1AA or whatever they're calling themselves, formerly FBS, or I don't even know. It's
sounds good to me.
College football. And I guess the disappointing thing was the way that they moved the ball on Nebraska. They pounded the ball straight up the middle. And normally, if this was the first time it had happened, I'd say no big deal. Maybe the big guys in the middle, they just weren't ready to go. But this has been a consistent problem since the first game of the season. When you go back in Western Kentucky and then Idaho, and even in that Washington game, I think that was the biggest shock, was on the third series that Washington had the ball, they just pounded the ball straight up the middle, and there were Nebraska guys flying everywhere, and that was the one really nice touchdown drive that they have, and they seem to go away from it, and I didn't know why. Well, the South Dakota State didn't go away from it. They just continued to pound the ball and pound the ball, and Nebraska, it was a bad day for them. So you have a team in South Dakota State that played probably one of the best games they've ever played, and the kids, I'll tell you what, sitting up in the stands watching those kids and the effort they were giving, you felt bad for them when they walked off the field because they gave everything they had. And Nebraska was fortunate because South Dakota State put the ball in the end zone twice. They had a pick six for a touchdown, and then they also scored on one of their first drives, and both touchdowns were taken away by penalty. So you look at both teams, and it was 17 points a piece, but Nebraska was fortunate, and they had a couple calls that went their way.
Well, the good news, the bottom line is Nebraska did prevail. They were able to come out with a win, but, you know, as you look at the big picture and how this all shakes itself out in terms of style points, I mean, how do you think that affects Nebraska?
Yeah, well, right now, you know, they seem to have I think gotten through it. They're still ranked in the top 10, and I don't know if that stuff will truly come into play until the end of the season. And that's something where if you have a few undefeated teams,
right?
You know, they may go back and look. If you're trying to compare to maybe an undefeated SEC team, and then you have Nebraska, who's played Western Kentucky, Idaho, and then barely beat South Dakota State. On top of that, the one big non-conference game that they played this year was against Washington, and it looks like Washington is not a very good team. They're maybe still closer to that winless season that they had 2 years ago than they are, let's say, their national championship season from 1990.
Do you like the layout of the Cornhusker schedule this year? You talked about Western Kentucky, Idaho, at Washington, South Dakota State, and then you guys have a bye and then get gearing up for Big 12 conference play.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if this is going to be a year that Nebraska wants to make a run at a championship, this is the year to do it because, like you said, I mean, the one tough game that they really thought they had within the conference was Texas, and that game's here in Lincoln, and now it looks like, well, maybe Texas isn't the team that it was cracked up to be. I mean, if Texas loses this weekend, you're talking about a two-loss Texas team coming in here unranked. So it's going to take away from, obviously, like I said before, the hype, but I don't know what else they have on their schedule. I mean, maybe this they're off, obviously, this week, but next Thursday night, they play down in Manhattan against Kansas State, and when you look at the things that have given Nebraska problems, like I said before, it's kind of that physical, pound-it-out style of football. That's exactly what Kansas State does, and they've got that big running back, Daniel Thomas, back there. And
yes.
He gave Nebraska everything that they could possibly handle last year, and you've just got to imagine, with Bill Snyder coaching, knowing it's the last time that they're going to play Nebraska in here in the conference, that he's going to have at least four or five trick plays up his sleeve. He is not going to be satisfied unless he walks out of that stadium with a victory.
We are getting ready to wrap up our Under the Helmet segment with Jason Peter, and we certainly appreciate Jason's time. And as I get ready to wrap it up with you, quickly, I mean, what do you think about TCU? I don't want to put you on the spot here, but, you know, they were able to come away with a win at SMU, a big rivalry between those particular schools. Did you watch that last week on ESPN?
I did, and they look good. But I tell you what, Alyssa, I think the biggest victory for TCU this past weekend was the fact that Boise State, I think, struggled a little bit more with Oregon State than TCU did. And
see, I agreed with you, and Kirk Herbstreit did not say that. He thought that the stats were pretty similar from when those two teams played.
I
was surprised.
I thought Boise State was fortunate to get out of there with a victory. I mean, not to get out. They played the game in Boise, but I thought that game was a lot closer than what the score indicated there. And I just think that TCU was more impressive in their victory against Oregon State than Boise was. And I think Boise probably, with all the hype that really has been surrounding them, and the same goes with TCU, but let's be realistic here. Both teams are not going to have a chance to play in a national championship. I highly doubt it. Even if there's a one-loss SEC team, I got to imagine that team will get the nod at least over one of the two schools that we're talking about, and it does come down to style points, I think, when you're talking about TCU and Boise, and I don't know how else you can compare. I mean, TCU, in my eyes, plays a much more difficult schedule. The only school that Boise has left on their schedule is Nevada, and I think it's the second-to-last game of the season, and Nevada's a good team in their own right. I mean, they've, I think, cracked the top 25, but, I think you do have to compare a common opponent in this case, and that's the only one you have is Oregon State, and I just like the way that TCU played them compared to Boise.
And speaking of TCU, of course, kickoff is set for 1 o'clock Saturday. They are on the road the first time this year at Colorado State. We'll be keeping our eye on that. Jason, as always, great job, and little Boomer Sooner to you. Did I catch you speechless there?
Then I'm happy because you're a Boomer Sooner. I don't know if you...
Well, so was your priest. Wasn't your priest that married you and Sarah a Sooner? I think you shared that.
The holy man who married me and my wife, he was a Sooner.
Love it. Okay, we're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here momentarily. Have a good weekend, Jay.